Do you ever feel stuck, like you're living your life on autopilot? Are you ready to shift into high gear and reach the success you so richly deserve? Welcome to the Play Big Movement podcast. I am your host, Sharon Lecter, entrepreneur, business strategist, and best-selling author. Playing big is not about settling for good enough or being comfortable. It is about reaching your highest potential and achieving your greatest success. Join me in my Play Big movement as I interview top experts in business, money, and entrepreneurship, all ready to serve you and to help you play big, be number one in your field, live your legacy, and create maximum impact. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. And I'm excited to have a new guest that I'm just meeting for the first time, as you are. Welcome, Josh Cohen.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, I'm excited because you truly are the embodiment of the American dream. And as everybody watching and listening that knows me, I talk all about the fact that the most successful businesses solve a problem and serve a need. And I just love your story. You started your business, I think you were, 21? In the back of your mom's car, I think it was.
Yep.
And his company is called the Junk Luggers. And you wanted to be basically economically friendly with helping people get rid of their junk. I have several garages full of junk. So I may need to find out if you have somebody here in Arizona. But I'm excited about your story, and I would love for you to share it with our audience.
Sure. Yeah. So again, thanks for having me on. It's a great opportunity. And Sharon, big fan of yours. And like I said, before we started the podcast, when my 5-year-old daughter gets a little bit bigger, I'm going to share Think and Grow Rich Roma with her.
Fantastic.
Amazing. Yeah. So, you know, like you said, I started, I was 21 years old. I was a student at the University of Connecticut, actually at a study abroad in Australia. And we were just drinking boxed wine, because that's what you do in Australia around a campfire. And a friend said he made $100 hauling away his neighbor's refrigerator. And I thought that's a great idea, something that I could do. And it would be just a great way to make some extra cash. And so I kept thinking about it. And as soon as I got home, I went on my parents' computer, printed out a flyer. 21-year-old college student wants to help you haul away your junk, like every 21-year-old college student. But then even from the start, you know, the flyer said, I want to help you donate items that you want to Goodwill, recycle what we could. And I quickly realized, even from our first job, that made a lot of sense, that a lot of the junk that people were hauling away wasn't actually junk. There were memories, things of sentimental value, things that just weren't garbage yet, that they were asking me to haul away. So I made it my own personal mission to try to find new homes for as many of these items as we could.
And then you had a point when you said, well, this is working so well, I need to like make it bigger. So talk about that mindset shift.
Yeah. So when I started, we got our first, you know, bunch of customers because I was going door to door handing out these flyers. I quickly realized that this is the kind of service that everybody needs, right? And I thought, well, I'm in this small town in Connecticut. Why would this not be needed all over the country, maybe even all over the world? Over the next few years, I went from my mom's SUV to I used $3,000 of leftover bar mitzvah money to purchase our first truck. Eventually, we just start to grow the fleet. I had the first vision of and growing throughout New York City and the entire metro New York area, huge market, not too far from where I grew up. So I spent about 5 or 6 years, took my team after a couple of years, planted us right in the middle of New York City, in the middle of the energy of all of it. And that's what we did. We expanded company-owned locations for a number of years. But that still wasn't enough. I still wanted to keep growing. I thought this was a great opportunity, a great business. I love the business. There's a ton of customer appreciation, which is something that, you know, personally was fulfilling to me. And after growing into a bunch of these markets around New York, it really became obvious to me that this was a difficult way to grow through company-owned locations versus, you know, when I was in one small section of Connecticut, I was very focused. I had a lot of skin in the game. And franchising was something that came on my radar and became very attractive because I could grow this with other like-minded business owners who have skin in the game and are very invested in their area.
And so when did you actually start your franchising efforts?
Started franchising about 5 years ago. And so that was after almost 10 years in business.
And how many locations do you have now?
So right now, I mean, we're still growing. We're in 60 markets. We have 21 franchisees. We're in 13 states. And really our goal is to get to 100 to 150 franchise partners in every major market, you know, within the next 3 years.
Well, that's excellent. That's wonderful. And so along the way, you probably had a little bit of a few bumps in the road. Explain some of the obstacles that you had to get over.
Yeah, like any business owner, we've had a ton. And some of them we've made twice or three times. You know, I think one of the biggest challenges over the years has been around managing and finding the right people. Like I think you hear from a lot of business owners. I have been told that I have the tendency to be too nice and to let things go too long and to be too loyal. And I think obviously there's
a very common issue. We talk about that a lot on this podcast. And you know, it is an issue many of us have to deal with, and that's making sure you have the right people on your team to help you deal with it. Because when you're a nice person, you want to stay a nice person, but you need to make sure you've got that velvet hammer on your team. So,
yeah. Well, I think I've learned to have the tough conversations, and that not having them really has more of a detrimental effect. I think obviously being nice is good because then people want to be around you, want to be a part of the company. And in some ways we've kept people and built a nice culture because of that. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, there were times where I was taken advantage of, or it just had negative effects. So I think, you know, bringing on the right people, not necessarily jumping to bring on that family member or that best friend, just because you have some comfort. That's probably a big learning lesson. And I would say in franchising in particular, when we started, we came in pretty undercapitalized for what I realized the franchise system actually needed. I think people think, well, it's franchising, so you're using other people's money. But what's really important to me and should be important to most franchise systems is that we've set up the right infrastructure, the right support system, so people are successful, they're happy, then you keep growing. And to do that, you need money to have the right people on your team, right? So
And the right legal foundation when you're talking about franchising is very important. And that's exactly, I mean, what the franchise is. You've got to have your systems identified and created and protected. So that you've got the basic foundation to be franchised. So that's all the things we talk about in the Play Big movement and in the courses that we teach, and that's the essential components of a successful business. And the only way to scale is to invest the time and energy and effort into creating those systems and documenting them. So congratulations on that. What's your greatest need today, Josh?
My greatest need today. Well, I guess I'm figuring it out because I just brought on my first partner, and they're going to provide a tremendous amount of resources to the company. So if you had asked me that question a month ago, I'd have a totally different answer. But today I feel like we're in a really good place with a lot of the things that we have needed.
And today you said this was your first day in your new office. So congratulations, huh?
Thank you. It's beautiful here. We're surrounded by trees and hills and mountains and grass. And most of my team was sitting in traffic for over an hour, bumper to bumper, heading to work. And now they're just flying into work. So it's a nice change for everybody.
Oh, quality. Yeah. So, but I think going back to what you said before, I want to just reiterate, sometimes we can be too nice and we create our own problem. And when you have a toxic employee, they can create a toxic environment. Most of the time, they're unhappy too. They don't want to be there. So having those tough conversations are important. And I always tell people, don't create a position for the person. Make sure you have the right person in the position and identify what you need to have done. And too many times we do want to save somebody and we want to try and create a position for them. And in the long run, it's not good for you, your business, or for them. So,
yeah, I've definitely experienced both. I've experienced toxic people Those to me have been easier people to move on from. It's the people who are not toxic but are not the right fit, like you just talked about. That's where I've really struggled to make changes fast enough in the past.
And it's hard. And I bet everybody watching and listening right now is thinking of somebody in their past, some employee that they had the same situation for. And in my extremely long career, it doesn't ever go away. Sometimes you just know that you've got somebody that you care about, but they're not in the right position. And sometimes you don't have the right position for them. And typically when you put it out there and you have that conversation and you can help them find the right position elsewhere, they're going to end up being happier in the long run. And you pretty much have a better chance of preserving the relationship. The other thing you mentioned, I want to just talk a little bit about, was bringing in friends and family. So I always talk about when you first do something, your friends and family are usually ones that say, you know, are the naysayers and complain about you. And it's usually because you're changing and they're not. And then as soon as you get, up and running, have some success, they all want to jump on board or they all want a loan. And it's something that's, every business owner I work with, particularly one that's younger, has experienced that. So don't feel alone, Josh. family and friends is better to keep them as family and friends. And obviously it makes things more rough when things don't go well in the business environment. So it's life has a way of throwing those things at you, right?
Definitely.
So when you started your business, did you have the vision of where you wanted to go?
No, I think early on, I just knew that there was something much bigger here than me hauling junk in my mom's SUV. I can say that over a few years, I realized that franchising was the way I wanted to go. I wanted to make this thing really big. I can't say that in terms of where we're going to be in 3 years from now, and I've already got my mindset that that's going to happen. I can't say that that was something I had planned for. You know, originally I was getting started to make some extra cash, some beer money, right? My internship wasn't paying well, but I think probably like a lot of business owners, what I realized was I had a passion for my own project, my own business, creating my own path. And I found that to be very contagious and intoxicating.
So if people want to find you, do they tell them how they can reach Josh or Junk Luggers?
Yeah, so you can reach me. I'm on LinkedIn, Junk Lugger Josh, and you can find Junk Luggers at junkluggers.com, JunkLuggers.com.
It's on your shirt.
That's right.
And so how many employees do you have now?
Now, system-wide, we have a little over 200. In the corporate office, we have about 70.
Wonderful. Excellent. Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, you're very young, so congratulations. I'm always excited when I see success at such an early age. And that means that you were steadfast in what you were doing and building it the right way. I always talk about solving a problem and serving a need, but the need to create the systems and maintain those systems is something that a lot of people overlook. And so the businesses don't have that strong foundation to be able to not just be successful, but scalable and sustainable. So I have great pride for you, and I know that your family probably is very proud of you as well.
Now that they realize I'm not just going to be a junk man, they're a little prouder.
So talk about the economic, you talk about the eco-friendly portion of your business.
What in particular are you...
Well, you're not just removing junk, you're actually helping people keep it out of the landfills, right?
Oh, the eco, got it. Yeah, sure. So yeah, that's a huge part of our business. Really how we separate ourselves from our competitors is our company mission. So our mission statement is to enhance lives, the community, and the environment by donating, recycling, upcycling, and supporting local charities. The nice thing is that's just not words on a page. That's the kind of thing that we get to live every single day, because we're going out to people's homes, their businesses. And like I said earlier in the podcast, we're removing things that often have sentimental value to them. They're things that are memories, grandma's kitchen table that everybody sat around for 35 years. Mm-hmm. People don't want to see that just thrown away, especially if it doesn't need to be. And so we've really put a focus on what can we do with these items. And so what we do is we donate as much as possible. And we have partnerships with a ton of charities throughout the country. We recycle as much as possible, metals, cardboard, plastics when possible, paper, things like that, mattresses, e-waste. We're getting better and better at this. And one of our goals is to not rely on landfills or transfer stations at all by 2025. The other thing that we've done to take it a step further is we actually opened up stores called Remix Market. And what that is we found sometimes donation centers are picky about the things that they'll accept or they're full at capacity. And so we took matters into our own hands a bit and opened up what started as really, you know, a single car garage tag sale with some of the better items that we haul away. And we opened up, it's now multiple stores in many parts of many of our franchisees have, where we resell items that we take in with a portion of the all proceeds going to support local charities. And, you know, we're saving items from the landfill every single day. And it's amazing what people will get rid of when they're moving or someone's passed away or they're downsizing. People walk into our shop, our showroom, and they are always stunned. I cannot believe people are getting rid of all this stuff. And we took away a 5-year-old Harley Davidson a few years ago. We had a lot of fun with that.
I'm sure.
So this is really just one of our other efforts to hit our goals by 2025. And it's great because we're saving things. We're helping the local community. We're selling things at really affordable prices. We're helping the landfills, and we are donating to local charities with every sale.
Fantastic. And what is your revenue model? If somebody wanted to use you, how do you charge them?
So it's really simple. We charge based on volume, so how much space someone's items take up in the truck. All labor and disposal fees, if any, are included in the price. So really, you just need to show us where things are. We'll come up, we'll haul them out, and we'll put them in the truck. And then basically how full the truck is how much we will charge.
Well, fantastic. I love that. And again, if you want to find more about Josh or Junk Luggers, because some of you may actually see this as an opportunity to start your own business because he does want to expand in franchising. So Josh, explain, and we're going to hold you over into our private Facebook group because I want to talk about your personal habits. But I know that you've since been married and you have twins, I think I saw on your resume. Tell us a little bit about what your personal life goals are as it relates to the business as well.
My personal life goals as it relates to the business or my personal life goals?
Both.
Okay. So personal life is an interesting one. I'm part of a business forum, and I think I'm the infamous guy who keeps coming in every month when they ask for personal updates. I don't have many because I have been so caught up in the business, for better or worse, and my wife and my 5-year-old twins. So I have a lot of goals for the business. Like I mentioned some of them earlier, I want to keep growing. I want to continue to create an incredible business model that other people can get into it. They can invest in the business and they can do very well and have happy lives and have a meaningful purpose above and beyond, you know, just making money. And to me, there's a lot of satisfaction there, and to help other people to get what I've got and to create their own path.
Well, I want to share with you that you are right on target, because I wouldn't feel guilty by not having personal goals outside the business, because your personal goals are to establish a highly successful business that will allow you and your family to have financial freedom. And that's typically what it takes, is 100% dedication and focus. So, you know, don't just let it roll off your back, because you're doing what you need to do to build that kind of foundation that will allow you to have more and more time for whatever you decide to do once it's at the size you want it to be. So that's the personal goals are to create a very successful business that will allow you to have the financial freedom to do what you want. So that's very typical, and particularly in very fast, upwardly mobile growing companies. It takes a lot of focus and energy. So I think that's a fantastic answer. So don't feel guilty about saying you don't have specific personal goals, because I think you do. Your personal
goals. I have 4 pages of bucket list goals, but most of them are not crossed off yet.
Yeah, well, you're still young. I'm still doing bucket list goals too, and I'm a whole lot older than you
are.
There
we go.
That's what life is all about, is what you focus on is what happens. And right now you're focusing on building that stability. So I applaud you. And if you'll be so kind as to hang out with me for a few moments, I appreciate you being with us. And all of you, please understand that this is a true American success story, but is also proof positive that today you can build a hugely successful business by solving a problem or serving a need. So thanks, Josh. And
thank
hang
you.
On for a moment. And thank you, everybody, for listening to this and watching this segment of the Play Big Movement with Sharon Lecter podcast. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Thank you for listening to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. Please subscribe to iTunes and leave us a review, as well as join us in other areas of social media, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Sharon Lecter, and for Facebook, author Sharon Lecter. Thank you so much and have a fabulous day.